This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hour two of The Bullpen is live and on the air as we continue along here until 2 o'clock. Andrew Carlson and Joe George with you on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Want to get in on the conversation at any point? Hit us up on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, or on Twitter. I'm at Carlson Radio. My man Joe at Joe George Radio. Our fantastic producer, Josh, behind the glass on Twitter at I Am J Chevy. So, the Astros are finding themselves behind in the AL West at this point in the season for the first time in really recent memory. Yep. They're 2.5 games back of the Rangers. Where's your confidence level at that the Astros are going to, at some point, find themselves on top and potentially run away with the AL West?
I don't think they run away this year. Do they finish on top? Yes, is the answer for me. But, you know, when you look at the AL West, the Mariners are still good. The Angels, they're all right. Like, I think the Angels are going to be in the unfortunate position for themselves to where they're going to be too good to trade Ohtani, and they're going to end up losing him in the offseason for nothing, which is good for the Astros, like, long-term. They're going to try to stick it out with this expanded playoffs. The Rangers, the thing is even though DeGrom's hurt right now, I just don't know if I buy it. Like, I don't know if I buy that Nathan Eovaldi is this guy that he's been so far. He's been absolutely incredible. Haney's been very good this year. Their offense, they just smash. Like, is that sustainable? That's a big question. Is it sustainable enough to help them win the division? The answer might be yes. As a World Series threat, I'd say no for the Rangers.
That's where I stand with them as well. Is there a chance that they win the division? I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe that the Astros will eventually reel them in and catch them at some point because the lack of depth in their bullpen and their rotation, I believe, will catch up with the Rangers at some point in the back end of the season. But they're going to be a threat for the remainder of the year because that lineup, they just mash, man. They're hitting .272 as a team. Yeah. That is pretty freaking ridiculous. And that's going to play for the remainder of the year. The Rangers are not a fluke. I believe that we can say that with 100% certainty now. They're 36-20. That's the second best record in Major League Baseball. This Rangers team is here to stay, unfortunately. And it's going to be a lot of fun because for the first time in God knows how long, the Silver Boot rivalry, is that what they still call it?
I think so.
It still means something. Like, it means something for the first time in probably since the Astros have come over to the American League.
Yeah, because these teams have really never been good at the same time.
Like, the closest we had, I believe, was 2016, the year the Astros missed the playoffs after losing that to the Royals the year before in 2015 in the playoffs. And the Astros were trying to chase down the Rangers, I believe. So that was the last time that they were, both teams were legitimately semi-competitive. And now you're talking about two teams that could potentially be contenders at the top of the American League. And while it may not be fun from a, hey, I love the Astros just, you know, running roughshod over the entire West all the time point of view, it's going to be fun from the aspect of there's going to be real competitive baseball in the series between these two teams for the remainder of the year.
And what's interesting about, you know, this for, you know, this year is this is where the schedule change does play a factor. You know, because they cut down games, the amount of games you play versus a team in the regular season. I think the Astros and the Rangers have three series left the entire year. It's just a totally different ball game than it was in the past because instead of playing these divisional times, whatever it was, 13 times, it's cut down now. So you don't have that extra opportunity to just keep beating up on them. So you're relying on other teams to help you beat the Rangers, and so they are for real. Like, they are good. Will the Astros win the division this year? To me, the answer is yes.
Probably,
yes. Pitching is better. The bullpen for the Rangers is a complete disaster, but the easiest thing to fix in Major League Baseball at the trade deadline is the bullpen. We saw James Click do this his first year. The bullpen was absolutely a disaster, and really, in a year time period from when he got the job, he put together the best bullpen in baseball. So the Rangers do have a lot of talented prospects. Like, they just lost one of their top ones, Kumar Rocker, the kid from Vanderbilt. They probably weren't going to trade him anyways, but they can quickly reestablish their bullpen. So the deadline is going to be really important for them, and I think will change some of the answers to these questions. Because if they do go out and they're very aggressive at the deadline and they acquire, I think they need like three arms in their pen. Then it might change the narrative of what this division looks like. But I believe the Astros are going to get it done still.
Yeah, and one of the big question marks for them, too, is does Jacob deGrom come back at any point? Obviously, he's sort of in the Lance McCullers category at this point,
yeah.
Where, you know, anything you get from him, I mean, obviously, for Rangers fans, that's probably not the case, given the money that they're paying him is slightly more than what Lance is making. Yeah. But
like a lot.
Yeah, just, you know, nearly three times. But, yeah, like, if deGrom comes back at all, that changes this equation entirely, because we all know what Jacob deGrom is. When he's healthy, you know, for the 10 to 15 times that he goes out on the mound and is able to start a game, mm-hmm. he's the best pitcher in baseball. And if down the stretch they get Jacob deGrom back, that changes this equation entirely, in my opinion.
It does. It is going to be a big factor for this. You know, it's going to be the deadline. It's going to be deGrom. Those are the questions. And really, look, there are questions for the Astros. You know, while the Astros right now are making it work, with Ronel Blanco, a solid first start, Bielak, JP France. If you're not getting Urquidy back anytime soon, you're obviously not getting Garcia back. I think it's fair to assume you're not getting Lance McCullers back. You know, this team cannot plan ever again. For the rest of his career, you cannot assume that Lance McCullers is ever going to be healthy. You have to assume that going forward, he's done. Like, I'm sorry. Like, we are, to me, it feels like Lance is closer to, he's going to be Mark Pryor.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're at a point where you can ever go into a season with the assumption that Lance McCullers is going to be healthy. And the Rangers should have, like, that's why I would never have paid Jacob deGrom a penny, because he's the same guy. He's never healthy enough, long enough to be a contributing factor to a World Series team. Lance McCullers is going to be the same way. It's great if you get him back for the playoffs. But last year, his fastball was down. Like, his velocity was down. He couldn't even touch 93 without having a setback.
Yeah.
You have to move forward. And that's where I think you have to be aggressive at the deadline yourself, because you're going to need it. You can't go into the postseason with your rotation as currently constructed and expect to win the World Series. Yes, you have Framber Valdez. Yes, you have Christian Javier. Those guys are elite, for sure. Hunter Brown looks elite. But the problem with Hunter Brown is that as soon as you get to October, he is going to have pitched more innings than he's ever pitched in his life. How is his arm going to react is a giant question mark. So the Astros, I think they need to be very aggressive. And frankly, anything not named Drew Gilbert pretty much needs to be on the table. And you need to go get an elite arm. And I think it would be in the best interest of the Astros to overinvest in this guy, whoever they acquire. And I think you need to try to acquire someone that's not going to be a free agent. Like, you're not – I don't think you should be looking at Lucas Giolito. You should be saying, can we get Dylan Cease? Can we get someone that is under arbitration or that is under their contract? Because these problems don't go away. Lance McCullers is a problem next year. Luis Garcia is going to be back at some point in 2024. You know, you think Urquidy is going to be back this year. He's slowly progressing. He said today he's hoping to work in his fastball soon. But you can't go into next season with where you stand. And I think right now at the deadline is your best opportunity to address that. And you just got to do it, Dana Brown, please.
Yeah. And moving forward, like, you look at Lance, I believe that he's going to have to be viewed almost as an auxiliary man in the rotation, like the sixth man in a six-man rotation. Like, that's how you're going to have to view him, where he's that extra piece, that bonus piece, but not something that's going to be relied upon. And you mentioned the Astros trying to make a move at the deadline to acquire another starting arm. That's something that's a drum that you've been banging for a couple of weeks now. And I've been on the fence about it for a little bit, but I agree with you at this point, especially given the setback. Before, we had some idea that Lance McCullers was going to be back at some point this summer, and it felt like, okay, once we get Lance back, then the rotation will be relatively back to normal. Clearly, there is no return date for him now. And with that being the case, what is that one thing the Astros have done over the past few years that has separated them from almost every other major league team? It's been their depth of pitching. They have consistently acquired more arms than you would even really think necessary.
Yep.
And it has paid dividends constantly throughout the postseason. And this season should be no different. the Astros should be making and should be looking at making a move for another starter. And that's what we're going to get into next, because Dana Brown, in that interview with MLB Network, he mentioned what the Astros are potentially looking at in the trade market right now. And you'll hear from what the Astros GM next on the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All your base are belong to us.
All your base are belong to us.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
With you till 2 o'clock here on the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Andrew Carlson and Joe George with you. My man Josh behind the glass. You want to get in on anything that we have to say over the course of the show today? HRMP listener line is the way to do that, 713-780-3776. So, Joe, I mentioned it earlier, this is a drum that you have been beating for a couple weeks now. I was on the fence. I'm no longer on the fence after the latest updates we've had on Lance McCullers. The Astros do need to acquire a starting arm. Before the break, I was teasing a little bit of audio from Dana Brown, so let's get right to it. I don't believe that he is necessarily in the same boat that we are. He was on MLB Network in an interview, and they asked him about the potential targets that the Astros might be looking at from a positional perspective. And here's what the Astros GM had to say.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about arms earlier, because we had two guys go down. And, you know, so, but now we're starting to say, wait, our pitching's been holding us up. The bullpen's been good. So the starting pitching's good. The bullpen's good. The defense is good. Maybe we need a bat, you know, and we're starting to talk about that. And if we could get a bat and add that to the lineup, because when we score runs, we're really good. You know, we get five runs, I think we are like 20, over 20 and four, like when we score five runs or more. So I think if we can get some runs, that's going to increase some of our winning streaks. So we will continue to look at pitching, because I always feel pitching keeps you in ball games. But we're not afraid that if there's a deal out there somewhere for a bat, we would consider that as well.
Now, he doesn't necessarily cross out pitching entirely, as he mentioned at the end of that cut there. But it seems like their focus right now is looking at adding a bat to the lineup, which I'm not against, but I just don't see how you look at this team, especially with the patchwork that they have at the back of the rotation, and say a starting arm would not be more valuable to this team at this moment in time.
Yeah, because, look, they know more than we know about Jose Urquidy, about Lance. You know, if they feel confident that these guys are going to return and can be effective this season, like then that maybe changes your perspective. I just think the idea of going into the postseason with Bielak and France and Blanco as like your potential game four starter. It's one game, right? Because in theory, you start game one of a seven game series. It's Fromber, then it's Javier, then it's Brown, then maybe it's a fourth starter, or maybe you're just going back to Fromber in game four. Like, is that possible? Yes, but one thing that, like, we saw last year is a simple game can change everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you go 18 innings in a playoff game, it can change your whole plan for your postseason. And depending on how the rest days falls and just everything, like, you're going to need a fourth starter. Could you go with – is the Astros bullpen good enough to do kind of the opener thing in a playoff?
Have a bullpen day.
Absolutely. Like, is it the best option? No. But could you see a scenario? Could I see a scenario where, like, Ronald Blanco pitches the first two innings of a playoff game and then the bullpen starts coming in? Yeah, I think you could do it. But if you're not going to, they do need to add something. I don't think this Astros team is just right. It's just not where it needs to be. And if you're going to go left field, like, let's just get someone that just smashes. Like, just get... To me, a guy that we've kind of been talking about during the week is Jorge Soler.
Oh, that would be a fantastic addition to the team.
All that dude does is just hit tanks.
Dude, he mashes.
He would love the Crawford boxes.
Well, we already know that he does. I was there for that Game 6 home run that cleared the Crawford boxes and then never landed after it cleared the train tracks as well.
And look, and Miami is, where are they at right now? Miami's 3.5 games back, but that's what's so hard about baseball now is like, who's available? Because it really does change the new playoff format. It changes absolutely everything. It brings in a whole new wrinkle right now that when you look at the American League standings for the wild card, you have four teams that are out of the wild card at this moment that are within four games. All of those teams, the Angels, Mariners, Red Sox, Blue Jays, are within four games of a wild card position. They all are probably not selling at the deadline, at least at this very moment. So your amount of sellers goes down. And this is where I think the Astros farm system does hurt them. I don't think it's as bad as everyone else makes it seem. I mean, you keep seeing guys come up and have success, but they're still not like these highly touted prospects that you need to make the trade. So it's almost like this double-edged sword. Like, while you may not have the prospects to obtain that arm, you have guys that contribute also to a high level just because there's just this weird disconnect. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does everyone say the Astros don't have a good farm system, but they just keep bringing guys up that have success? It's really bizarre.
It is strange. There's something about the Astros minor league system that is bypassing these ranking system. Whatever it may be, the Astros have consistently had a very poorly ranked farm system over the past two, maybe really three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't mattered because they've, at least according to MLB prospect experts, have seemingly plucked major league contributors almost out of thin air.
Yeah. And when you look at the National League, it's the same thing. The Colorado Rockies are in last place in the National League right now. They're 25-34. They are 5.5 games back of a wild card spot. So every single team in the National League is vying for a wild card spot. The Marlins right now are tied for the lot. They would technically miss the playoffs, but they're right there. It's like, who's going to buy? Who's going to sell? And that's where it could be tough for the Astros to make a big acquisition, whether it's a starter, bullpen, or hitter. Like, it's just, it is the reality that you might only really be having, like, everyone's going to be calling the A. Well, what are you calling the A's for? Mm. Nothing. What are you calling the Royals for? Zach Greinke? Like, what are you calling, like, the White Sox? That's why I think the White Sox are going to go. I know in the Twitch chat, some people don't think that Dylan Cease would actually be available, but I think that's the reason why you are going to see the White Sox do a full teardown is because they thought they were going to be good enough to win the division. They're a complete disaster, and they've got the most talent of any of these bad teams. So we're like, you might see, like, I think you could see three or four or five major trades from the White Sox. And I know that sounds like a lot, but, you know, the Cubs, just like 2 years ago,
dismantled their entire World Series team.
In one day, they traded like three or four of their main core World Series guys in one day. So like, it might sound unrealistic, but like, you could look at Giolito and Tim Anderson and Eloy Jimenez and a bunch of these guys get moved at the deadline. Eloy is another one that I would love for the Astros. He's just never healthy.
Yeah, we have enough of those guys already, Joe.
That guy needs bubble wrap.
We have enough of the guys who you can't count on a consistent basis to be out on the field. And another name in that same division, Shane Bieber. I'm sure that you saw the reports earlier this week. Now, personally, I'm not touching anything the Cleveland Guardians, formerly the Cleveland Indians, are selling with the 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
Because you look at the history of the guys that they have shipped out that are in a similar position to where Shane Bieber is. Most of them have not turned out like CeCe Sabathia and Cliff Lee. The rest of them have gone on to almost fall off a cliff, so to speak, after leaving the Guardians. They seem to know when to sell, so that's one that I wouldn't necessarily touch. But look, if you're wanting an arm with pedigree, there's not much better than a former Cy Young winner who many rival GMs are expecting to be on the market come deadline time.
Oh yeah, there are options, and a lot of this will change too. And what I love about the new playoff system is that like some of these teams are going to make decisions off of like 5 days of baseball. The 5 days leading to the deadline before August 1st this year, if they go on a 5-game win streak, they might buy. If they go on a 5-game losing streak, all of a sudden you're going to see teams selling. So like, you don't really know who's going to be available. Shane Bieber is a great name. And I think, honestly, I kind of wonder what the Padres are going to do.
Dude,
they are
like in no man's land at the moment.
They've got an incredible amount of talent, and they suck.
They're spending an incredible amount of money, and 5 games under 500.
Yeah, I'm going to be wrong about that one. I picked them to go to the World Series this year.
You're not alone.
I picked the Astros to play the Padres in the World Series this year, and like, I still feel good about the Astros, but the Padres are just this. It's so weird because it's not like basketball or football. Like, you're not talking about chemistry. It's just this collection of talent of like these really great baseball players are just a mess. Same, it's what the White Sox are too. Like, there's like real elite talent on these two rosters, and they can't win baseball games.
It's what we've said about a few teams in the past, and we've seen them come out gangbusters once the trade deadline, once the All-Star break passes. So,
yeah.
I mean, it would not shock me if the Padres go on a run at some point in the season, and they're only 5 games under 500. You mentioned it with the new playoffs system now and the way that so many teams are in contention. As much as I would love to try and pick that roster apart, just even the tiniest bit, with how much money they've invested,
yeah,
my guess would be that they're going to do whatever they can to go even further all in, even though they've got basically every chip they own in the center of the table. I mean,
dude, they almost paid $400 million to Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Like, people think they're going to be in the Ohtani market this offseason.
He's going to the Dodgers. I will die on that hill.
I think so, too. I think the Dodgers know something that everyone else doesn't. Look, they let Trey Turner walk without even trying. Like, they let one of the best shortstops in baseball, who's been kind of bad this year, but like, they let him walk without even trying to compete and keep him. That feels like to me like, hey, we're gonna take a year. We're still gonna be really good, but Walker Buehl is out, and then we're gonna get Ohtani, and we're gonna just roll out. Like, we're gonna pay him $1 billion.
They reduced their payroll. When's the last time the Dodgers made a significant effort to reduce their payroll? It clearly is all building up to them making a run for what's going to be the most expensive free agent of all time.
I still think there's a chance. I think the only team outside of the West Coast, I think the Mets could just throw crazy money at them. I think the Cubs could still potentially be in that game too. But outside of that, like, to me, it's Dodgers, Padres, and the other team, I don't totally buy it. I think there's still a small chance the Mariners get in the mix.
I do too. The Mariners, they're starting to slowly put things together.
Yeah.
They started the season very poorly, and I know they lost to the Rangers last night. Thanks for nothing, Seattle. But they are starting to really get that team up and moving again, and they're going to be a player in the wild card competition. I firmly believe that they're going to be a player for one of those wild card berths by the end of the season.
Yeah, definitely.
So the Astros conversation will continue. Dana Brown was not done in that interview with MLB Network. He had some comments on the six-man rotation, and a lot of people thought that it was just going to be a temporary thing for this little 17-game stretch here, but it might be here to stay. We're going to discuss that next. ESPN 97.5, 92.5, this is The Bullpen. Andrew Carlson and Joe George.
ESPN 97.5, because every day is Children's Day.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
With you for another 30 minutes or so here on The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, Andrew Carlson and Joe George, alongside our fabulous producer, Josh. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm at Carlson Radio, Joe at Joe George Radio, Josh at IMJ Chevy. Am I saying that right, Josh? Chevy? I feel like I'm pronouncing it incorrectly there.
No, you got it good.
Okay.
Well, the Chevy part?
I feel like I'm saying Chevy, and that's probably not how you say Chevy.
Well, because it's not his real last name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like
we went Chevy because the first show I tried to do his last name and I butchered it. Chevenet.
You know what? I like how that sounds.
And
if
wrong.
In France, you would be right. But
what is it?
It's Chevans.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm gonna roll with Chevenet still.
I'll be honest with you. I don't even remember you telling me that. I thought it was close to Chevenet, and I was butchering it somewhere that way.
No, I told you that if you like did the actual like French translation, like you switch out like the last three letters. I can't remember to what exactly, and it's pronounced Chevenet. Like there's a whole region in France called Chevenet.
Gotcha.
There we go. So we got the full explanation there. So maybe I'm not butchering it too badly. If you want to explain to us how Josh should be pronouncing his name, 713-780-3776. So one more little nugget here from Dana Brown in this about 5 minute spot he had on MLB Network, and something that another thing that I just don't necessarily agree with, at least to the degree that Dana Brown seems to think. He discussed, you know, the performance of the back end of the rotation and the fact that they're moving to a six-man rotation. And while I don't have the same level of confidence that he's had in J.P. France, Brandon Belak, and now Ronel Blanco, he made some comments about the six-man rotation that made it seem like it may not be the temporary thing that I and a lot of Astros fans probably expected once they made that move.
Yeah, so some of the kids have stepped up, which has been great, you know. So France has stepped up, and Belak, he stepped up as well. And then we're starting to stretch out the rotation to a six-man. And Blanco, you know, kept us in the game last night and gave us a chance to win that one. And so it's so important that we stretch this thing out so that our guys could get stronger down the stretch.
So that last part, so our guys can get stronger down the stretch. That doesn't sound to me like it's going to be a totally temporary thing. When you say we're going to get our guys stronger down the stretch, to me, that implies we're moving to the sixth man for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I agree. I think what we're going to see is that you might see some concerns of what's happening right now and that they believe a six-man rotation and keeping these guys spread out a little bit will help, you know, kind of alleviate that. We talked earlier about Hunter Brown, the amount of innings that he's pitched in his career. We're at the Twitch chat brought this up with Christian Javier, the fact that his fastball velocity is still down. So that's where, even though I don't love the six-man rotation with the current guys you have, I think there's a benefit to it. And honestly, man, like, I really think that this is where we're heading in baseball. And not, I don't know if it's full on every single team, but I do think over the next 3 or 4 years, we are going to see teams view these injuries and one of the ways you can prevent them as a six-man rotation, and more teams will do it. And now, look, a lot of these might be openers, bullpen days, but just to kind of give these guys a little more of a gap, and you can, well, you can say what you want about them, but they throw harder, faster, quicker than ever before. And, you know, that's something, too, that people have talked about with the new pitch clock.
I was about to say the pitch clock, yeah.
You 100%, like, you're not getting that breather in between.
There's more stress on these pitchers than ever before. They're putting more stress on their elbows, their shoulders, their arms than ever before.
Definitely. So going to a six-man rotation can alleviate some of that. Cool, but, man, there's going to be some stretches where these guys might get banged up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you are going to need the offense to carry this team when you have – you could have a night – you have 3 nights in a row where you have Ronel Blanco, you know, Belak and France going 3 straight games. Like, that could be tough.
Yeah, that's 100%. And that's my main issue with it, because don't get me wrong, I appreciate the work and the effort that the back-end guys of the rotation have done to this point in the season. They have patched things together far better than I think just about any Astros fan could have ever believed when we were saying, hey, we're going to have to throw Brandon Belak and J.P. France into the rotation. When that news ended up breaking and those guys were thrown in very close together, when that happens, I think most Astros fans were sort of worried at how long-term is this going to be. We might need to make a move for a starter right now. They've pitched so well that it's alleviated the immediate need of the Astros needing to bring in a starter. But if you're truly moving to a six-man, I think that just further amplifies the need to bring in a more consistent arm, because the underlying stats, which I'm a big believer in, just they don't look all that great for Brandon Belak and J.P. France. They don't look terrible, don't get me wrong, but they don't look as good as their performances would indicate thus far.
Yeah, no, like these guys are, they're 4A guys. You know, Ronel Blanco is, he's up there. I mean, this is not, and look, I think a lot of people, and one thing, honestly, I think Dana Brown and Dusty Baker did something really unfair, to be honest, to Forrest Whitley. Like, they said that if Forrest Whitley didn't get hurt, they were going to call him up. That really sucks, like, to say that about someone after they're getting called up, like, or after they get hurt. And if you missed it last night, they said he's got a lat strain. Forrest Whitley does. He's out 3 to 4 months.
That's basically a season.
I mean, look, that means he's back in, like, August. If it's 3 months, he's got, well, what are you ramping up for? Like, he's done. And I think that's the end for Forrest Whitley, by the way. Forrest Whitley, I think, is out of options or in years and things like that. So I think he's going to have to make the opening day roster. He'll probably get cut next year.
Mm. He was untouchable, man. Like, he was untouchable years ago. And, like, the stats that he had were up there with some of the best prospects we've seen move through the minors at a very rapid pace when he was just, like, what, 19, 20 years old?
At one point, he missed, like, a season and a half, and he was still one of the top prospects in all baseball.
Yeah, and he was an incredible talent, but it's clear at this point that his body is just betraying him, and it's a really sad story. You see it happen throughout baseball on a relatively consistent basis, unfortunately, and it's awful to see. But we have a caller on the line. We have Travis, who wants to talk about the 6-man rotation. Travis, what you got for us, my man?
Hey guys, man, as soon as they announced they were going to a 20-second pitch clock, I said more pitchers are going to go down with injury. I mean, if you think about it, if you've been watching this year, the average pitcher has been pitching with 6 3/7 seconds left on the clock. So they're throwing three times in 1 minute and putting that much torque on their arm. They are going to go down big time, and it's going to be all on Major League Baseball for doing that. So, yeah, I see a lot more pitchers getting hurt, and 6-man rotation is probably the way it's going to be.
Appreciate it, Travis. Appreciate it, Travis. Thanks for the call, my man. Yeah, I think he's 100% right. Like, as long as we continue to put more stress and strain on these pitchers, it only makes more and more sense to relieve that in whatever way that teams can. And that a lot of that's going to be by adding an extra day off in between starts.
And look, and it's going to be interesting over the next, I don't know how long the experiment goes before, you know, that kind of this theory that Travis is putting, and we acknowledge it as well, that, you know, is the pitch clock going to have like a clear, like, effect and causation to injuries in baseball? If there is a clear pattern, then maybe one day we'll see the pitch clock go away, or we'll see it altered pretty dramatically, because that's a hard battle to fight, because honestly, the product is better. It is better this season. Like, the game time, it's honestly way more enjoyable with how fast these games are going. It is a clear difference. The pacing, it is fun. Like, I really, really enjoy these rule changes they've put in. I like the fact that the shift is gone. I don't miss it. You know, because they can't throw to first base as often, we're seeing a ton of stolen bases this year. Like, there's just more movement. There's everything. The really only concern, I think, at this point is the injury stuff. And while, you know, Travis, I think you have a valid point, and there is some concern that the pitch clock is causing this, I would say let's wait. I think we got to wait a year, because I'm curious, like, if we see the amount of injuries we're seeing right now, next year, when there's not a World Baseball Classic.
That's a massive point.
Like, is there, the Astros, like, what, 4 of their 5 starters pitched in the Classic?
Yeah.
At some point, you know, and 2 of them are still healthy at this point, Javier and Fromber. But, like, is there a cause and effect with some of these guys? Like, I don't know the full answer. You know, it's tough. Like, you can't use a guy like Jacob deGrom as a reason, because he's always hurt. So what does it look like over the next 2 years? Definitely matters, for sure. But it just sucks, because I like it too.
Yeah, the World Baseball Classic was so much fun. And
yes.
You're talking about how fun and this baseball season has been to watch, because, like, it's almost baseball in its purest form. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we got some of that in the World Baseball Classic, right, with the emotion that guys were playing with their hearts on their sleeves when they put that country name across their chest. Mm-hmm. And that's something we didn't always necessarily see when they're playing for their major league ball clubs. And it would be a real, real gut punch to say, hey, you know what? The World Baseball Classic is going to have to go away because of the fact that player safety comes first.
Yeah. It's, you don't want to see it go away. And that's where all this is a factor. And, you know, but with the Astros specifically, like, while, like, it's also easy to connect the new stuff to these injuries, I think we're also kind of forgetting the fact that the Astros pitchers have pitched more innings than anyone else in baseball. Like, they've gone to the ALCS 6 straight years. I know, obviously, not all these guys have been there, but Framber Valdez has been a workhorse deep into the playoffs the last 3 seasons. Like, so was Urquidy. Like, even though he didn't pitch most in the postseason last year, same thing with Luis Garcia. Like, and then they went and did the World Baseball Classic. So it's just a lot. And you hope that it's just, look, the Astros got super lucky last year with injuries. Not so much this year, but they'll be all right.
And I think that luck, you can say it's luck, but a large part of that could have been the fact that they had a 6-man rotation. And I believe that's why you're going to see teams emulate what the Astros did last season and tried to do more of it moving forward. You saw the success they had last year.
The Astros lead from the front.
Yeah. It's a copycat. Every league is a copycat league. Mm-hmm. And look, the Astros, they just happen to be the best at setting the standard. One segment to go before we get out of here. The NBA Finals are underway, and the Nuggets took a 1-0 lead. Sorry, Josh, your Heat didn't look so great in Game 1. But are the Denver Nuggets a blueprint for the Houston Rockets? I'll explain next. ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We got weights and fish.
We got weights and fish.
There we go. Oh!
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Final segment of the show here on The Bullpen. Andrew Carlson and Joe George with you for another 12 minutes or so here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe, the NBA Finals are underway. They got off to a bang a couple nights ago with the Nuggets, taking a 1-0 series lead over the Miami Heat in really dominating fashion. And while we can talk about the game for a second here, what I really want to look into is how I believe the Nuggets should be a blueprint for how the Houston Rockets want to operate moving forward. Now, okay, I'm going to lay this out for you pretty simply. There are a few key players on the Nuggets that I believe can be relatively analogous to a few of the Rockets' key players. I think the most obvious one is Nikola Jokic and Alperen Şengün. Now, obviously, Alpi has a long, 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 long way to go before he is anywhere remotely of the level of a two-time, should-have-been three-time MVP. But that being said, you can see some of the base similarities in their game and the way that Jokic is the hub of the Nuggets offense and the main facilitator. You can see how that could be replicated to a degree with Alperen Şengün. Jamal Murray, a fantastic pick-and-roll player, just electric off the dribble, can get to the rim, but also can pull up almost at will from anywhere on the court. I believe that there you can see the similarities in what his game and what Jalen Green could theoretically do if he gets closer to reaching his ceiling. And then the last one for me is Michael Porter Jr. He is the third cog in that Denver offense and just a lethal spot-up shooter who all of a sudden, for someone who is just really offense-only coming out of college and what he was in high school, has turned into a really solid defender in this postseason. Doesn't pass the ball at a super high level, doesn't handle it at a super high level, but he rebounds well for his position. He's tall, he's long, and he can shoot the damn ball. Jabari Smith Jr. could be that guy in theory for the Rockets. So if you look at those three core cogs for what the Nuggets have, I think you can see some loose similarities. Now, obviously, you have to squint your eyes a little hard because the Rockets are nowhere near polished like these Nuggets players are, but you can see the similarities in the games and say, hey, you know what? I think that the Rockets, if they follow along with this path and these guys develop the way that the Rockets want them to, there's a chance that they can be operating in a relatively similar fashion to the Nuggets.
Okay, so I very much agree with you. And part of it is that, and I think the thing the Rockets need to try to emulate the most with the Nuggets, and it goes with the Heat as well, patience.
Stay the course.
You know, Mike Malone has been the head coach of the Denver Nuggets since 2015. And I'm not saying they should have kept Silas. I think he was in over his head. But, you know, Mike Malone could have easily been fired last year or the year before. And you look at the NBA, the coaches who got fired this year, like, there's a reason to argue. Like, Mike Malone could have got fired too. I don't agree with that. But, like, when Monty Williams is getting fired, when Nick Nurse is getting fired, like, when all these guys are getting Doc Rivers, like, even though we know what he is, like, the Denver Nuggets, based off what everyone else is in the NBA, could have fired their head coach. They chose not to. They stuck the course. Like, they believe they had the right leader for their team. And, like, you know, when you look at the players, like, there are similarities. Jamal Murray, I was just letting him tell this story about how he went 0-17. He didn't make a shot his first five games in the NBA. Mm-hmm. He just kept missing. And obviously that's his first year versus now, but you know, the seventh pick in the 2016 NBA draft, Jamal Murray, like, it took a while for him to, like, really, it was like that bubble. It was the bubble season.
That bubble Murray. And people wondered, was this really who Jamal Murray is moving forward? Or was that just a flash in the pan? And then he got hurt relatively soon after that. And he was playing well up until that injury. And it took a lot for him to come back and be who he was before that ACL injury.
Look, and they signed him before the bubble year to a 5-year, $170 million contract. And there's a lot of arguments to be made. Like, that was a bad deal.
At the time, yeah.
He hadn't really played to his potential before he was Bubble Murray. And that's where, like, they believed in the talent they had. They believed in Mike Malone. They believed that Murray was going to get there. And they had a clear development process. And, like, that's the big thing for the Rockets. It's like, they need to develop. And that's where, like, I don't know if this is where you're going with this, but this is why the Nuggets and the Heat are the reason why I don't think you pay James Harden. Because you don't need to. The Heat are built on guys who are undrafted and late-round picks. Like, they are, you know, they are not a collection of superstars. You don't have to be anymore. You have to develop talent. Like, and the Rockets, like, that needs to be their goal. And that, to me, is why Silas got fired, is that these guys didn't develop at all. Udoka, his job has to be to develop. And if he can, they can be a really good team. And they can get pieces here and there to help win a title. And, like, I don't think Harden fits into that. I think where they're going could.
Yeah, Harden may not necessarily fit into that. I'm still very much on the fence in how he will help Jalen Green and some of these other guys develop their games. Like, in the analogies I mentioned, if you want Jalen Green to become Bubble Murray, so to speak, or for, like, what he was for the Nuggets,
he can, man.
He can, but if you want Jalen Green to become that, then I think a lot of that is going to come from, you know, taking the lumps as he continues to develop his handle and develop his feel for the game and operating out of the pick and roll. And if James Harden's on the floor, those opportunities are probably going to be significantly less than they would have been otherwise. Look, do I think the Rockets need to add in some veteran talent to, you know, help this team mature? Absolutely. I don't think that there's any question about that. Ime Udoka can only be one voice in that locker room. You need a player voice who is going to be there and sort of echo the coach's messages and really be the backbone of the team, which is something that they haven't had thus far. And I don't believe that James Harden would be that guy, but they do need to add something this offseason. But the stay in the course thing, Joe, that you mentioned is 100%. Like, that is what the Rockets must do throughout this rebuild process. If at some point it looked like, look, the Nuggets showed flashes for a long time, and they were getting to the point where they were good, but they weren't a great team. The Rockets still have a long way to go before they get there. And obviously, if you don't even get to the point of being a good team, at some point you do need to just blow it up and move on.
For sure.
But you need to give this group the opportunity to coalesce the way that this Nuggets team has. And that's why I'm so excited about these next couple years of Rockets basketball, because there's the chance for them to become something that is a truly special team-oriented brand of basketball that we haven't seen in Houston in a long, long time.
How do you feel? I know last week when we did a show, the Celtics were still in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about Jaylen Brown now?
So I was...
He can't dribble.
Yeah, so I was not super high on the Jaylen Brown signing, but even less so after that Game 7. Like, if you want someone to be a primary star in the NBA, you have to be able to handle the basketball.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You cannot be the best player on a team and, you know, you're liable to turn it over every time you put it on the floor simply because you don't have a handle. And that's where Jaylen Brown is at this point. And it's been an issue for him in college all the way up till now. And when someone has shown you that's an issue for, what, now 6-7 seasons, that's not some defect that they're just going to magically fix over an offseason. That's a part of their game. It's a facet of their game. And clear that Jaylen Brown's not going to fix
it. Yeah, regular season Jaylen Brown, like, yeah, sign me up for that. But postseason Jaylen Brown, like, when he's getting pressure like that and people play, like, real defense, it just was so bad.
Well, and with the new salary cap that's going to be coming into effect, too, essentially the way that it's going to work in layman's terms is they are abolishing super teams. Super teams are not going to be a thing in the NBA anymore. You are not going to be able to have 3 max-level players on one team. If you do, it's basically going to be only minimum contracts around them. The only way that you'll be able to build teams moving forward is either 2 superstars on max level with some role players around them, or 1 superstar with a bunch of higher level role players around him. So the way that the NBA is headed from a salary cap perspective, I don't want to be spending one of those slots on Jaylen Brown when he might have to end up being my best overall player.
Yeah, honestly, I think I prefer the 2-year, what we talked about last week, like the 2-year $70 million for Harden over Jaylen Brown at this point. Like, if you can get Harden and not be a max contract guy, think that's my preference.
Yeah.
Like if you're telling me, like, I have to choose one, I think that's the option I like the most.
If you're telling me that I have to have one of those veteran shooting guards and I'm getting James Harden for that Kelly Eco reported, or, well, theorized 2 years, $70 million, yeah, sign me up. Sign me up. Bring James home. All right, that'll do it for the bullpen here on Saturday. I'm Andrew Carlson. That is Joe George to my left. We had our guy Josh behind the glass manning the controls all show long. We're going to be back tomorrow, 10 to noon. It's our guy B-Mac, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders with the second edition of the Bullpen on Sundays. You guys tune in. That'll do it for us. See you next week.
ESPN 97.5, the only Houston sports station with a bidet.
The bidet, there's a sturdiness to it. It can accommodate a fairly heavy carriage.